The Andy Finn Show is back, and on this day, August 18th, in 1958, Lolita was published, Mike.
Ooh.
That was the racy novel of its time.
That was the one about the older man who falls in love with the 13-year-old girl.
I believe she was about 13. I waited till it came out in movie form. Of course, I was only 8. I had no idea what that was about at the time. 13 seemed like an old woman to me.
Yeah.
But same year, the TV game show scandal investigation started in Congress.
Oh, the quiz show thing.
Yeah, that was, if you saw the movie Quiz Show, you know what it's about. Mm-hmm. Charles Van Doren was caught cheating, along with the producers of the show 21. I think it was NBC, but I could be wrong about the network. I don't want to disparage any network that doesn't deserve it. Ah, they all deserve it. Don't worry about it. And then in 1958, same year, all three of these things happened in the same year, Fidel Castro made a speech on a Cuban pirate radio station, Rebelde.
Rebelde, Spanish for rebel.
Yeah, that'd be good. And what's interesting is, I always thought of Fidel as a pirate. But this was before he came to power. Of course, he came to power in 1959, the longest-serving leader, monarch, whatever you... Not monarch, dictator in the world, longest-serving leader in the world. He has been in since Eisenhower was president. So we've all said our goal is the removal of Fidel from power, right? Eisenhower was president, and we didn't want him in. Kennedy was president. Kennedy didn't want him in. Of course, we had the Bay of Pigs then. Johnson was president. He didn't want Castro in power, wanted to get him out. Nixon was president, didn't want Castro in. Ford was president, didn't want Castro in. Carter was president, didn't want Castro in. Reagan was president, didn't want Castro in. Bush, 41.
Clinton, Slick Willie.
Bush, 43. And the policy is still the removal of Fidel Castro. Meanwhile, he's been through about 8 U.S. presidents and 47 years in office.
Wow.
I still think they should try those grenades in his beard.
Oh, the exploding cigars?
I forget which it was. It might have been Little Men. I forget it. It sounds like a harebrained scheme, but nothing else is working.
I remember one time on the news, they showed a quick snippet of Castro giving a speech a few years ago, and I loved the way he finished it. He said, Viva Cuba y viva yo. And the translation is, long live Cuba and long live me.
Long live me.
Well,
it's hard to argue with that.
Yay.
Well, I do have one more little piece here, and this is weird. There's a monk called Brother Roger. He founded a commune in France. He died this week. He's a Protestant monk, 90 years old. This picture, he looks like 120 in the picture. He was murdered. He was stabbed. A 90-year-old monk was stabbed to death by a, quote, apparently deranged 36-year-old Romanian woman.
Those Romanians.
A public prosecutor told a news agency that the woman hoped, quote, to attract Brother Roger's attention, but not to kill him.
Well, now, if you ever want to get my attention in, just call my name, please.
Yeah. Don't put a knife in your gut. Is that what you're saying?
Please,
because that would get your attention.
Yeah, it'd ruin my day too.
Yeah, it would, and you might not be able to finish the show.
No,
we wouldn't want that.
No, we wouldn't.
That is just the most bizarre thing. We're not going to spend any more time on it, except to say, Brother Roberts is in heaven, and his attacker probably will be soon.
That just shows what a bad and horrific experience the Romanians had under Ceausescu. They're still not getting over.
Actually, at 90 years old, maybe she did him a favor. How long did he want to hang around?
You're so bad.
No, I'm actually not being totally facetious about that.
Yeah.
Not a favor, but the point is, he probably wasn't too shook about it.
Why couldn't she have stabbed Ray Killen?
Well, that's a good question.
Huh? Let's get some Romanian deranged chicks over here to Philly, Mississippi. Put a contract out on Ray Killen.
No, we don't want to take the law into our own hands.
No, we don't want to do that.
But I also don't want him out on bail, so it's driving me crazy. Okay, so let's move on to something serious, and this is the war in Iraq. Now, we're going to get to Cindy Sheehan, but there's a number of things going on here. And the first is that there's a lot of bad news in the papers for the Bush administration. Now, a lot of people will say, you know, because I take a lot of this from the Washington Post, my hometown newspaper, they'll say, oh, well, Washington Post is a liberal rag. No, the Washington Post was rabidly supportive of the war in Iraq, to a fault. And they have a nice mix of liberal and conservative columnists on their editorial page, on their op-ed page. And so anybody who thinks that they're a rabidly liberal paper needs to pick a copy up and read it. But they are tough on any administration when they get to the analysis sections. And so this is an analysis piece that was on the front page of yesterday's Washington Post, Wednesday, August 17th. And the headline is, U.S. policy on axis of evil, that's in quotes, suffers a spate of setbacks. And what it does is it goes through and points out that in the 3.5 years since Bush put forth the notion of the axis of evil in his State of the Union address, or his State of the Speech to the country, whatever you want to call it, as he says in his quote, I just love that Bushism. And the people laugh because they know he's an idiot.
In my State of the Union, or my speech to the nation, whatever you want to call it.
That's the one.
Oh, George, you're killing me.
And then he goes on to say, I asked people to give 4,000 years. I mean, hours. Okay. He named three countries as part of the axis of evil in a clever reference to both the axis powers of World War II and the evil empire of Ronald Reagan. Unfortunately, the three he tried to link together were North Korea, Iran, and Iraq. Well, within a year, a little more than a year, he went into Iraq. But what they're pointing out here is that he has fewer options when it comes to Iran and North Korea, who are both much farther along with nukes than Saddam ever was.
And they also actually have viable military forces as well.
That's true. Particularly North Korea, we cannot attack them. Just last week, President Bush said all options are on the table with Iran. But in fact, that's a bluff. And a president shouldn't bluff. You shouldn't be saying stuff that you're not going to do. He's still talking tough. But in fact, we're not going into Iraq. I mean, Iran. That's just the way it is. And a report also came out a week ago that says that Iran is 10 years from nukes. Now, some people are questioning that, but that is a bona fide U.S. congressional or U.S. report. In any case, it isn't simply that Iran, we don't have many good options towards Iran, and we don't have many good options towards North Korea. Of course, we're a bit mired down in Iraq. So without going through the analysis, the complete analysis of this article, it points out that the Bush administration has backed off a lot of their tough talk about the axis of evil. The second thing is that the editorials about Iraq are really pessimistic these days. Now, again, I will freely admit here we're talking about liberal editorials, okay? Liberal editorialists. For example, Richard Cohen, Bill O'Reilly refers to him as a left-wing radical or whatever, has written about this. The ones this week are David Ignatius, who's left of center, and Harold Meyerson. Now, Ignatius basically said that we're in a real hard slog, using Rumsfeld's original term. And, you know, the Washington Post did a piece a week or so ago that said, was titled, U.S. Lowers Its Sights on What Can Be Achieved in Iraq. I guess that was Saturday or Sunday, so last Sunday probably. And that was an interesting piece because this is the way the generals and the people in Iraq are talking, is that, you know, this delivery of democracy to Iraq is a fiction. And what we're hoping for is to leave a country that doesn't degenerate into civil war, and then we got to get out because we're part of the problem now. Part of what the insurgents' excuse for the attacks is that the U.S. is an occupying power. And so some of the attacks go away as soon as we leave. Now, not all of them. But we got to leave them strong enough so that they can handle the insurgent attacks that are left and hope that a lot of the attacks dissipate when we leave. So it's kind of a catch-22. Some of the attacks are happening because we're there, and we can't leave till the attacks stop. That's a problem. In any case,
it's a vicious circle. A
couple of really pessimistic editorials in yesterday's paper. The other one was Harold Meyerson's Iraq on the Brink. And it talks about, just the problems with trying to forge this constitution in Iraq, and the fact that while they're trying to forge a constitution, they may be closer to their civil war than we were at the time of our founding of our constitution. Because I'll get to that later, actually, the potential for civil war, which people warned about, the State Department warned about it before we went in. And I'm hoping it doesn't get there. But what Meyerson really critiques is the blasé way the Bush administration went about security after we got control of the country. Saddam's army scattered, and we weren't prepared to secure all the sites. We weren't prepared to secure the borders. We weren't prepared to secure the government buildings, the museums. We weren't prepared to keep law and order. The looting happened, and Rumsfeld said, you're going to get lawlessness and looting. You know, you can't worry about it. But that sends the wrong signal. Mm-hmm. If we had been tough, people would have realized we were tough, and, you know, it would have been a different story.
Yeah, we stood idly by while they were trashing lots of historic sites and reaping all kinds.
And again, this comes back to the idea that had we had twice as many troops in there, that kind of stuff wouldn't have happened.
Well, they also said a lot of the senior generals were reluctant to use the military as a police force as well. They said, we're not a police force. We're a broadsword. This isn't our gig, man. We're not doing it. And so a lot of the senior generals have to answer for that as well, not just Rumi.
Well, that's all true. But my thing, and I you can go to my website and see the 13 mistakes that George W. Bush couldn't remember about Iraq, because there are 13 big ones that he made about Iraq. He's now in the middle of a 14th one, forcing a constitution when they don't actually have to have a constitution right now. They could be focusing on governance and elections, I think. Mm-hmm. But one of them is, instead of putting the State Department in charge of nation building, which makes perfect sense, they decided to put the Pentagon in charge of nation building. Right? Colin Powell was shut out, and the State Department, who had prepared all these reports on how to handle the aftermath, how to maintain security, how to control the sites, how to do all of these things, they ignored all that. Bush put Rumsfeld in charge. Rumsfeld put generals in charge. Remember the Paul Bremer and the second leader? These guys were military men, not civilians. Mm-hmm. And so we may say we didn't want to do nation building, but when it came time to do nation building, George W. Bush listened to Rumsfeld and Cheney and agreed that, yes, the military are the best people to engage in this non-military assignment.
Yeah.
And I think that was a huge mistake.
Huge mistake.
And people at the time said so. It's not like this is second-guessing. There were plenty of people that said so at the time. And the talk was of cakewalks, and the talk was of the oil revenues will pay for the war, and the talk was of you worry too much. Well, those chickens have come home to roost, and that's in part what some of these editorials were about this week. So I was actually been surprised at how pessimistic the editorials are, because even though I'm someone who was against the war from the beginning, I'm a firm believer we can't just cut and run. We have to stay around and secure the country, whatever that means. But it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. And right now, a lot of the columnists are saying, you know, there's no good way out of this.
So do you think all this talk about a possible beginning to withdraw the troops in the spring of 06 is just rhetoric before this election coming up? Or
no.
Well, do you think they actually do want to draw down the troops and are thinking, you know what, this thing wasn't what we thought it was. The Iraqis have a somewhat functional security force, a somewhat functional government. Let's just cut our losses and get out of Dodge before it gets too bad.
Well, I think that any number of people, Republicans in Congress in particular, want to see this settled before we get into an election campaign in 2006. The pressure on Bush is not going to come from Democrats. Mm-hmm. The pressure is going to come from Republicans that have another election. See, Bush doesn't have an election, of course, but Congress everybody in Congress runs for election. Look at what happened with this guy in Ohio, heavily Bush country. Bush won 65% just last fall. He lost a Democrat that called him a son of a bitch and didn't retract it, and claims that he screwed up the war big time, got 48% of the vote, and lost 52-48 in an area that voted 65% for Bush just last year, and he was dissing the commander-in-chief.
Yeah, I think the anti-war feelings have increased.
Now, he was an Iraq war veteran, which will help any candidate like that. Now, there's at least, so far, there's four more veterans running next year. Two Democrats, two Republicans running for the House. One actually for the Senate, believe it or not. No other political experience a year from December. But it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how that all plays out. What's his name? The Dark Prince. Robert Novak wrote an article before the election.
I thought that was Karl Rove.
No.
Oh, sorry, Karl Rove's the Dark Lord.
He's the brain. He's Bush's brain.
Oh.
But the Dark Prince, Robert Novak, wrote a piece before the election last year saying that the plan was to start drawing down troops in the before spring. Now, that it does dovetail with a little bit of what they're saying, spring to early summer they can bring out troops. But anyway, you look at it, the pressure mounts as we approach the election. And that's too bad because I don't know when the right time is, but you hate to see it be dictated by political needs. So we'll see what happens. In any case, the pessimism is all over the airwaves. Now, not in the conservative media. They're still talking it up and saying this whole thing's winnable. But it's, you know, people are making comparisons to Vietnam, which I still think is not quite where we're at yet. Meaning, the North Vietnamese won the war. Right? That we left. Henry Kissinger did a piece in the Washington Post a week or two ago in which he said that Vietnamization worked. No, Vietnamization didn't work. This was Nixon's peace with honor. We bombed the hell out of North Vietnam and drove them to the peace table. And in Paris, we signed a peace agreement that they had no intention of keeping. They just wanted us out. We left by 75, and then they overran Saigon within a year or two. And we look back on that, and conservatives say, well, we struck a good bargain. It would have been fine. We had an honorable end of the war, and they didn't keep their end of the deal. We knew they weren't going to keep their end of the deal. But very different situation. The North was going to win in South Korea, even if we had never shown up, the North was going to take over that country. Mm-hmm. Two differences here. A, the insurgents can't actually win this, the way the North Vietnamese took over all of Vietnam. But secondly, North Vietnam, that problem was there whether we went in or not, or whether the French went in or not. That was going to change in Southeast Asia. In Iraq, if we hadn't gone in, I assume Saddam would still be in power, and I assume that you wouldn't have all these insurgents running around the country, and I assume wherever we'd be fighting terrorists, it would be Afghanistan, or it'd be hotel rooms in Germany and France, but they wouldn't all be flocking to Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
So a couple of differences. In any case, when we come back, we're going to talk about Over There, the FX TV show. We're going to talk about an Ohio couple that's urging that the president either escalate or get out. Totally different from the Cindy Sheehan case that was just in the paper today. And then we're going to talk about Cindy Sheehan and the politics on the right and the left around this mother who lost her son in Iraq. But we played and played.